Hey, I'm Matt Welty, and welcome to another episode of the Crossroads Anywhere podcast. Whatever your beliefs on God, this is the right place for you to explore. You can learn more about Crossroads at crossroads.net and join us every week right here for new content. This week, our senior pastor, Brian Tome, is talking about how Jesus is the life.
Yes, it's going to be a good week next weekend, but I am more excited right now about today finishing off this series on the way. So before we do that, why don't we pray right now? God, I am asking that clarity would come to our minds, we would see things that we hadn't seen before, that we would experience things that we couldn't experience, even on a beautiful weekend like today. God, I know these are your people, and these are your folks who are wanting to find something. So help us to find who you are and to find the depth in our heart that comes in relationship with you. And I pray that all that I say would honor you and you would be pleased. And I pray these things according to the character and identity of Jesus. Amen. Well, I know that I get picked on every once in a while because of my words. I've been known to make up words. I've been known to not have the best diction. I've been known to have inappropriate words. I've been known to spit when I get excited. But I have to tell you, even myself, I'm a little bothered by what's happening in the English language right now. Yes, we're losing grasp on actual meanings of words, and we're using words inappropriately. Words like epic, awesome, transcendent. Let me clue you in. Your vacation was not epic. A lot of people have gone to the beach. It's just not epic. I'm sorry. And that meal you had last night, that cool little restaurant that people are talking about, it was not awesome. It'll be in a sewage pipe going down Main Street 12 hours from now. Awesomeness doesn't do that. It's not awesome. And transcendence? Transcendent is not just a new thing to mean it's better than. Like in business speak right now, I'm reading about such a thing as transcendent brands. Let me tell you something. I hope Crest beats Colgate, but it will never be transcendent. Crest can never be transcendent. Transcendent is on a different playing category outside of the realm that I understand and where I am. This is the life. No, it's called having a beer on your couch. This is the life. And yet we keep using, and while we use these words, then all of a sudden, we got no words left for what happened on Monday. A total eclipse. How many of us actually made a journey and actually saw a 100% total eclipse? I was curious. Raise your hands wherever you are if that is you, any of you, very few of us. All right. I had a very transcendent experience, using that word appropriately, on Monday. And I want to use the rest of our time to talk about that and actually, believe it or not, how that parallels this series and how that parallels Jesus, who says that he is the life. He is the life. In the book of John chapter 14, 6 to 7, it says this: I am the way, I'm the truth, and I'm the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you had known me, you would have known my Father also. From now on, you do know him and have seen him. We say, man, I'd love to know what God looks like. How come I can't figure out what's he really like? And God says, I'll figure this out. I'm going to come as my own son. I'm going to take on my own flesh. So Jesus says, you want to know what God looks like? Right here. Dummy proof it for you, right here. Here's the value of God. Here's the values of God. Here is the way I operate. This is my character. And Jesus says, this is how we understand life, understand him. And everything else in our culture is trying to tell us that we can get life any number of different ways. Just go to your Facebook feed. There'll be so many different ways that you can get life, and it just doesn't satisfy, does it? Our culture is doing everything we can to up the ante of excitement on things that we're now almost unexcitable. What used to be clickbait and criticized as clickbait, we now can't even tell the difference between clickbait and main headlines. because of the grandiosity and the way in which we discuss things and proclaim things. And throughout all this stuff, there are signs happening. There are signs in our country that life is on the decline. The Atlantic magazine recently said this: for the first time since the 1990s, Americans are dying at a faster rate, and they're dying younger. A pair of new studies suggests Americans are sicker than people in other rich countries, and in some states, progress on stemming the tide of basic diseases like diabetes has stalled or even increased. The studies also suggest so-called despair deaths, alcoholism, drugs, and suicide are a big part of the problem, but so is obesity, poverty, and social isolation. We're getting sick at a faster rate we did 10 years ago. Guess what? Our embracing of science? Science isn't helping us. I'm pro-science. I love science. But guess what? If you think science can really give you life, it's not. We live in the most scientifically advanced age in the history of the world with the best meds, the best everything, and the statistics are very, very clear. Life is going down. The National Center for Health Statistics said that in all deaths of the 10 top deaths that there is, 8 of the top 10 deaths have increased in regularity. We have right now 3.4% of the United States population suffering from serious psychological distress. Mental illness is on the rise. Suicide is on the rise. The signs of life are not, life is on the decrease in our culture. That's just the statistics. And then on Monday, we have a godsend that comes on Monday in the form of a total eclipse. Yeah, a godsend. There's another one. No, he's not a godsend. He's just a good date you had last weekend. A godsend. A godsend. That God would organize and orchestrate the solar system that every once in a while, a little itty-bitty object would block out a big, big object at just the right distance, and something would happen that is truly awesome. Something that has happened that is truly rare and on a grand scale and is epic. And God sends this and prescribed it and engineered it, and it was predicted mathematically. But for a day, we liked each other. For a day, we had positive, non-clickbait headlines. For a moment, we all were one, regardless of what side of the aisle you sit on politically. This is known as the most photographed, most shared, most tweeted event in human history. Think about that. Most photographed, most shared, most tweeted event in human history. I believe it was a sign. Jesus talks about signs in the book of Matthew chapter 16. He says this: the Pharisees and Sadducees came, and to test him, they asked him to show them a sign from heaven. And he answered them, "Well, when it's evening, you say it will be fair weather, for the sky is red. And in the morning, it will be stormy today, for the sky is red and threatening. You know how to interpret the appearance of the sky, but you cannot interpret the signs of the times. An evil and adulterous generation seeks for a sign, but no sign will be given to it except the sign of Jonah." We'll talk about the sign of Jonah in a moment. But Jesus says, look, there's some parallels with the physical realm and the spiritual realm. In the physical realm, if you take a look at the sky and you see what it looks like, it's a sign of what the water's going to be like the next day or what it's going to be that morning. It's a sign. So some people can determine the physical signs, but can you not be aware that there are spiritual signs? Learn to notice the spiritual signs. When it comes to spiritual signs, there's two types of people. The first type of person is the person who sees a sign in everything, and all the signs say death, destruction, the end of the world. They're like all into that. I've been following Christ. Jesus has been my life for about 35 years. And in that 35 years, the number of people who have talked about signs of the end of the earth, the end of the world, I just lost count of them. I just lost count. Like, it's a sign the world's going to end here because of the such and such generation is going to expire. And here's a sign, a sign of Y2K. That was one. Oh, a sign, Y2K. Forget it. Nuclear missiles are going to go straight up in the air and come right back down and fall on our heads. All of our wealth is going to be wiped out. We're going to be back to the Stone Age. Stock market's going to crash. Everyone's going to be penniless right here. You know, whenever they predict that, it never happens. It only happens when they don't predict it. Here's a sign. If you're into signs, it's a sign that you don't have a life. That's what I've learned, come to understand. I mean, people who are really into that stuff are hoping the world ends because they don't have a life right now on the world. Seriously. They haven't figured out how to make life work, so they're just hoping it ends. And so that's one aspect of the way folks do it. And the other side is me. You can see I get a bit cynical about signs because they just haven't come true. All the ones that have been probably, they haven't come true. And yet, Jesus says in this passage, you should be aware of the signs. You shouldn't be like seeing a sign on everything, and you shouldn't be cynical. And by the way, part of the reason why I get a bit cynical about a sign is because seeing the signs always tend to be something negative. Why do we assume that with God? That's always negative. Could be. One of God's signs is a rainbow. A rainbow was the sign that he would never destroy the world again by water. So whenever you see the rainbow, it's a sign of God's loving protection. It's a sign. There are signs from God. They're about forgiveness. That's like the cross. It's a sign of forgiveness. Like Jesus stretches out his arm and dies. It's a sign. There's signs from God that he just loves you. There's signs that God is patient. Yes, there are signs that can say something bad is happening, but why is it that we trend always towards the negative? It doesn't have to be that way. I'm not sure what kind of sign it is, but I've become increasingly convinced that what took place on Monday was a spiritual sign. Ed Sullivan says this, "We are all part of something celestial, so much bigger than us, so mysterious. There's so much to ponder. I don't even know what questions to ask, but I enjoy just feeling the mystery." I was a guy, found out, Ed Sullivan. Not ancient TV Ed Sullivan, not that Ed Sullivan. That Ed Sullivan never saw a eclipse. You've never seen a total eclipse before Monday. If you saw it on Monday, your parents never have, your grandparents have. Something really beautiful took place on Monday. Let me spell out some details that you might not have seen that I've figured out since, because I've always been fascinated by eclipses. I remember when I was, I think it was fourth grade, my teacher, Mrs. Derby, talked about eclipses, and she talked about you can never look at the eclipse because it'll burn your eyeballs out. I was like, oh man. I've heard about shooting your eyeballs out, but burning your eyeballs out, that sounds awesome. So I've always had this sort of like this mystique and this like aura around. So when I read, you know, a couple months ago that the first full solar eclipse is coming to America in 100 years, I'm like, I am in. I don't care when it is. I don't care what day it is. I'm clocking off work and I am going there. You realize that this eclipse went from the western part of our country to the eastern part of our country. It hasn't happened in 100 years. And if you were to chart a path to go west to east, the arc of what that would do, you couldn't hit more states than if you took this exact path. 14 states. Do you realize that the next one, if you miss this one, you got another shot coming up soon. The next one is going to go south to north. And if you were to design a path south to north, you couldn't pick up more states than you would on this one. It's 13. Anywhere else. In Carbondale, Illinois, they're going to have a solar eclipse that's going to happen again 7 years from now. A solar eclipse shouldn't happen mathematically or scientifically. Generally, the general accepted thing is about every 357 years. It's going to happen there in 7 years. We have an X, a giant X over our country, separated by 7 years. No other country gets this. No other country we've ever known in our lifetime gets like a massive X right on top of them. Our country is the most dominant country in the world. As America goes, so goes the world. As business goes, as America's economy goes, so goes the economy of the world. As our currency is, so goes the currency of the world. As our entertainment is, we set the pace and the standard for entertainment and movies and TVs. Not very well, I might add, with our content. But we are the aspiration of the content generators in mass media culture across the world. Our military spending. We spend more on military spending than the next 9 countries combined. 3 times more than China, 9 times more than Russia. Something there. Education. People from all over the world come to America because America has the greatest higher institutions of education. The richest of the rich all over the world come here. And while they come here to have our great education, you can be born in this country and you can have the worst education if you happen to have unlucky DNA and coming into a family that didn't have resources. The separation of educational opportunities and life quality is stunning in our country. Yes, we are a very unique country. And there's going to be an X over top of us. And by the way, this X, the next eclipse, crazy. I haven't been able to see one for 100 years. I get another shot in 7 years. You can go to Westchester, Ohio, and you can see a solar eclipse. You know anything about Cincinnati? My gosh, you can go to Fields Earle Road. You can go up there. My gosh, imagine the traffic jam, Fields Earle Road. 7 years from now, my word, sheesh. I'm going to get my private helicopter license by then, hopefully. Yeah, 7 years. 7. 7 is a unique number in the Bible. It's known as God's perfect number in the Bible. God rested on the 7th day. There are 7 days in a week. I'll just throw out some 7s off the top of my head. An animal couldn't be sacrificed until it was 7 days old. One of the early miracles in the Bible when the nation of Israel was going into the promised land, their first conquest was hopefully of the city of Jericho. And Joshua and the people of Israel were told to march around and pray around the city of Jericho 7 times. And then they were to bring out a trumpet before it all collapsed and do that, blow the trumpet 7 times. Jesus in the book of John, he likens himself, he says he is God because he uses God's name to describe himself, I am. We've seen 3 of them in this series. I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. There's also, I am the bread of life, I am the light of the world, I am. And he does this in the book of John 7 times. He says that we should be amazing forgivers. We should be able to up for forgiving people 70 times. 7. In the book of Revelation, we have the 7 letters to the 7 churches. Jesus seen coming back, holding the 7 stars in his hand, the 7 bowls, and the 7 judgments. 7 is a very significant number in the Bible. I believe this very incredibly rare thing that's happening over more states than it ever could have, west to east, south to north, inside of 7 years is a sign for what? I don't know. I don't know what it is. I don't know. But I know there's something transcendent happening. And anybody who actually went to the 100% eclipse, you can understand the meaning of the word transcendent just a little bit more. One of the early signs in the Bible for Jesus was an astral projection in the sky that the Magi, or that the wise men used to find Jesus. Theologians debate whether or not this was perhaps an eclipse or something like that they were seeing in the sky, or if this was a unique astral projection phenomena that God put in the sky, maybe a shining angel or something like that for them to follow. I don't know. What we do know is this. There was something up in the sky that was a sign. I mean, it's crazy, right? If you liken the size of the moon to a BB, the size of the sun would be a 6-foot-high earth ball or beach ball. That's the comparison between the moon and the sun. BB, earth ball. And that God would position our earth to be the perfect distance that the BB the BB would completely block out except for the magical aura of the lit gases coming around. And that would happen here. If the earth is a little closer, don't see it. If the earth is a little further, doesn't see it. If the BB is a little larger, it doesn't happen that way. If it's smaller that way, it's the only place it happens like clockwork in the entire solar system. As far as we know or I've read, we don't know of any other place than any other solar systems or galaxies anywhere. But it's like God set up a sign to happen every very so rarely. And we got to see it on Monday, and we get to see it again in 7 years. Things that make you go, Three things that the eclipse, I believe, the eclipse of the sun has in common with the Son of God. Three things that I've learned going to see the eclipse on Monday, and I think these principles are the same thing with understanding Jesus as the life. First is this: some are up for the journey, some are up for the journey to the life, but most aren't. Some are up for the journey to life, but most aren't. Because I've always been intrigued by having my eyeballs burned out, I've always been on the watch for solar eclipses. And so when I just read about it a couple months ago, I was like, "Oh man, I am on that." And so we went down. What we decided to do was my small group. I said to our small group, "Hey, let's do this. Let's make pilgrimage together." And no one was really planning on doing this, so I was like, "Oh, okay, whatever." And so what I did is I found the chart from west down to east, and all I did is I looked for a big splotch of green that would be close to Cincinnati, because a big splotch of green on a map means it's a national forest. In a national forest, not a national park, not a national monument, not a state forest, in a national forest, you can camp and poop anywhere you want for free. My favorite three letters, F-R-E. Anywhere you want. So I'm like, okay, I need to get down the night before to beat the traffic, and you get down there, and then we'll be kind of set up for the next morning. So we were in Shawnee National Forest, right across the border from Kentucky and Illinois, and I was shocked that there wasn't more traffic going down. Just shocked. I was shocked that coming home, it only took me 7 hours or something like that instead of the 4.5 it should have taken me. It should have taken me 12 hours to get home. It should have been 5-mile-an-hour bumper-to-bumper traffic from Louisville to Cincinnati. Now, a lot of us just didn't know about it, didn't think it was a big deal, didn't whatever. Some of us like, oh, it's interesting, but the journey just wasn't difficult for us. It wasn't big of a deal for us. That's the same way it is with Jesus. Jesus says in the book of Luke, he says, "Seek and you will find, knock, and the door will be open to you." Let me say it again. Seek, and you will find, knock, and the door will be open. He doesn't say, "Sit on your rumpus, and you will receive." He doesn't say, "Just stay where you are and expect God to bless your life." He says, "Seek." He says, get going. And that very, very, very few people actually wanted to seek an eclipse, I believe mirrors that very, very few people, very few of us really want the life of Jesus. We philosophize about the life. We, you know, debate about the life. But very, very few of us want it. Second thing that's in common is you only get the life in community. You only get the life in community. When I went down, there was more people in this national forest than I had ever seen in a national forest. There was a lot of folks because some people had figured it out. Everyone I saw was there in community. Everyone I saw there was other person, except for one guy, because I asked him if we could camp by him because he had some open spot in his field where he was. I think he even had some other people coming down to see him. But everybody was in community. It was kind of cool. You experienced the solar eclipse with other people, and you experience Jesus with other people. Jesus is not a solo sport. All kinds of people, all different kinds of communities. I was so wanting to make sure I was prepared that I was reading that you have to have the right glasses, and there's knockoff glasses that are, you know, that you could use these glasses, think of the right glasses, and still burn your eyeballs out. So I'm like, I'm not getting one of those. So I found there was like five different organizations that were reputable. One, I think the one I got mine from was the astronomical society or something like that. So they're not set up for moving product. They're not set up for helping people with one-off stuff. They're all of a sudden all overwhelmed, and now they're trying to monetize it. Good for them. They're trying to meet their budgets, all that kind of stuff. So I could only buy a pack of 50. I bought 50 solar glasses for $83, 50 of them. I'm like, $83 is worth this to me, and I got other friends I'm going to give them to, and I'm still going to make me some jack off these somehow. So we find this place where we go. There's this guy is charging for his fuel, $20 a person, $20 a car, totally gouging. And again, hardly anybody was there, but who was there was every kind of person you could possibly imagine. So my friend, who's the big salesman, he's in sales. So he took all the glass we had left over, and he did 10 to 10 sales is what he did. He brought me back my money. It was wonderful. Thank you, Mikey. He was wonderful. But the kind of people out there were just... You have people out there who had welding helmets on. You're going to look up, just lie on the floor and look up. You have people who had like these cardboard construction filter homemade boxes they were doing. You have people out there who, like, I don't know how they were, I don't know why they needed glasses, because their eyes were swollen shut because they're in community with the Doobie Brothers. I'm like, my gosh. So I'm like, it's a solar eclipse. You're so baked. You wouldn't know a solar eclipse if it sat on your face. But yet they bought glasses. That was cool. So the cops couldn't see their eyes, I guess. But everybody was in their own different community thing. This is the way it is with Jesus. You experience him in community. In our culture, in our spiritual culture, we translate this rugged individualism of America, which maybe this is why we have rugged individual neuroses in such record degree. Maybe it's because we have so much rugged individualistic heroin addiction and rugged individualistic suicide that doesn't work in the social sector, and yet we try to apply to the spiritual sector and say, me and my personal walk with Jesus, my personal walk with Jesus, my personal time with God. The idea of a personal time with God really didn't come up until the last 150 years or so. Till that, and if you want to experience God, you always had to do it in community. It's why many Anglican and Catholic churches still have multiple masses every day where you can connect in community with people. And yet for us, the average American, it's just me and God. I don't need anybody else. It's just me and God. Now, guess what? If it's just you, you're not going to find out about an eclipse, and no one's going to lead you there. No one's going to take you there. I felt so missed opportunity at the end of this. The people in our small group said, man, I'm so glad you brought us. I wouldn't have thought about this. I just was bummed. I'm thinking, I should have had a whole weekend message on this beforehand. I should have been filling up my Twitter feed with this. I should have been telling my daughter, blow off class. Telling my son, you know, blow off work. Tell my daughter, you work for me. You can take off work anyway. I should have been getting everybody I can possibly get. And I missed that opportunity. I'm sorry for that. But I'm telling you right now, because in 7 years, happen again. Though if it's cloudy, it sucks to be you and you lost your whole life. Sorry. Happens in community. God does something in community. He does personal things often when we're in community, and this is a piece of Andy's story.
Yeah. So I didn't grow up in church, and occasionally I would go to church with my friends. When I was 7, my grandpa died, and at that time in my life, I had like no concept of what life or death was. And it shook me to my core because I was really close with my grandpa. And because of that, I actually started to develop these like severe anxiety attacks. And basically I would think about life or forever, and it would send me down this path of like, what does this all mean? Why are we even here? Like, what is my purpose in life? And it would basically incapacitate myself. Like, I couldn't move. And like, I would just cry and freak out and scream. Or like, if I was at school, I would like run to the bathroom and freak out and cry. I dealt with that from like the time I was 7 until I was in high school. And in high school, it got even worse because I wanted to kill myself, because that was the only way to escape the never-ending, nagging pain of not understanding what my purpose was or why I was here. And the only way to make it go away was my solution, was to end my life. It wasn't until I was a freshman in high school, and I was at a football game, and I met this college dude that was hanging out with a bunch of my friends, and he invited me to a summer camp with Young Life. And I heard the gospel in a language that I could understand. The speaker talked about how there's this eternal separation that we have from God, and that's the pain that we feel. Later that night, he talked about how Jesus died on the cross to bridge that gap, to make it available for me to have a relationship with God in the way that he created me to have a relationship with him. And that was it. That was the key for me. I went to the guy and I was like, man, I'm in. Like, whatever this is, I'm in. I don't really know what it means to follow Jesus, but like, I need this. Like, I know that I need it. And I prayed to God for the first time, knowing that he was listening, or at least trusting that he was listening. And I was like, God, if you're real, show me. And that was the first night since I was 7 years old that I didn't have an anxiety attack before I went to bed. And the next morning, I didn't have one when I woke up. And I haven't had one since July 4th, 2006. Finding and accepting Jesus for me was a lot like hearing him say, this is my kingdom. And what I understood that to be after I knew him was, there is a place for you. You have a purpose. I'm going to do something with your life. There's more to this story. I need you to trust me. And I'm like, yeah, because I'm scared to die and I don't want to. But I want to know what my story is going to be as you write it.
Powerful. Powerful because he has experienced Jesus. I mean, no one would debate that an eclipse happens. We all know that. But it's just crazy that there's still people who debate whether or not Jesus lived. There's still people who debate whether or not his teachings actually were. That is craziness. We mark time after the guy. Doubting the historicity of Jesus is like doubting gravity. Doubting the veracity of his teachings are like doubting the times table. Because his teachings, they just work. They just bring life. And it happens regularly in community. The power of Jesus transcends even the power of an eclipse. What's the sign of Jonah? The sign of Jonah is that the old ancient story of Jonah, and it was talked about here at Crossroads several weeks ago, is a guy, Jonah got swallowed by a large fish and then vomited up onto the beach 3 days later. Jesus is going to be swallowed by death, put into the belly of the earth, and he's going to be then vomited out or come out later, 3 days later. It's the belief in the literal, physical, historical resurrection of Jesus. And it happens in community, the whole thing. The first people he shows himself to is women, a community of women. This is really crazy because the Bible is trying to create a lie for people to believe. It would not have him talking to women first because women were less than in that culture. Women weren't even allowed to give testimony in a court of law. And yet, Jesus appears to them first and they give testimony to the other male disciples. Why? Because the Bible is simply recording history. By the way, this is also why wherever Jesus and his followers, his community followers go, in every culture, the value of women and the rights of women always escalates. Always. That's just history. Science doesn't escalate the rights of women. Buddhism doesn't escalate the rights of women. Islam doesn't escalate the rights and the status of women. Clearly in the circle, the last 2,000 years, when Jesus starts to get a grip on a culture, the value goes up. Not as high perhaps as it needs to go, but higher than anyone else was taken. And we see this with women being the first eyewitnesses and being recorded as telling men. Then we see these men. There's 11 of them. One kills himself, Judah. Judas, right after Jesus dies. 11 of them left. Of those 11, 10 of those 11 die of unnatural causes. Only one, the apostle John, who we're reading of right now in the book of John, only one, John, dies of old age. The rest of them are killed for their faith. Charles Colson, who was a part of Watergate, he was President Nixon's hatchet man in his inner circle. He got convicted, obviously, went to jail, and in jail he came to see Jesus as the way, the truth, and the life. He embraced that. And he says that one of the reasons he did is when he went to jail, he had people who were believers in Jesus who were visiting him from the Senate and from Congress in jail, giving him mercy and giving him love. And he realized that the most powerful men in America at that time sat in a circle, President Nixon, Chuck Colson, G. Gordon Liddy, others, sat in a circle, and they said, we agreed on a lie. We agreed on what our story was going to be. We knew it wasn't true, but we agreed on it. And the most powerful people in the country couldn't keep their lie a secret for a week. And he said, how in the world could these 11 people all conspire on a lie and keep the lie to their deaths? He said, that's the one that hit me, that the resurrection actually happened. And if it happened, something powerful took place in Jesus' life, and I want that. 500 people were recorded as seeing Jesus in the book of Corinthians. And it says that in the book of 1 Corinthians, 500 people, because in doing so, they're calling out, oh yeah, you know your uncle, your uncle's talked about this. Yeah, your grandmother's talked about this. Your mom has talked about this. They were there. And now these 500 people, they were crucified as well with some by Nero, the emperor of Rome, who put these people up on stakes, lined the thoroughfare into Rome with them and set them on fire and said, all you got to do, say that Jesus isn't king. Say that he hasn't risen from the dead and I won't do this to you. And they said, no, saw it, I'm doing it. We should expect a sign if God was to ever come to the world. We should expect a sign of the most amazing magnitude, like coming back from the dead is only God. We should expect that sign. Great world-leading defense attorneys have said, if I had to defend the resurrection of Christ, given the evidence in a court of law, I would win it every single time. It's there. And Jesus is still bringing people back to life right now. He's still doing that. Maybe not physically, but he's bringing people back to life emotionally, and he is doing it physically. There's physical miracles I've seen with my own eyes that the risen Jesus has done. There's emotional and spiritual healing that's taken place. He's still bringing life today, and he can bring life to you. But you got a journey. Third thing, and last thing I'll talk about today, that the eclipse and the Son of God has in common is that the life is either totally found or totally missed. You don't get it half right. It's totally found or totally missed. Professor Angela Speck says this, although a 99% partial eclipse is impressive, it is not 99% of the experience of a total 100% eclipse. The sun is so bright that even with only 1% showing, it gives us 10,000 times the light of the full moon. Man. I've asked people, hey, did you see the eclipse? Yeah, I see the eclipse. So where'd you see it? Florence? Sorry. You didn't see it. That was 93%. Sorry, 93% ain't jack. Not Jack. I saw 10% eclipse, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90% eclipse. Then I saw 91, 92, 93, 94, 95, 96, 97, 98, 99% eclipse, 100, 99, 98, 97, 96, 95. I'll tell you what, there was only something special that happened at 100. Now, a friend of mine took a selfie video of it. Before I show you this video, let's do a little video tutorial, okay? If you ever take a video or picture with your camera, how do you watch a movie? What's the screen look like? Looks like this. Doesn't look like this. If you go and you watch your television at home, what's it look like? It looks like this. Doesn't look like this. People are going, no, let's go like this, okay? So this is turned the wrong way, but at least somebody captured it. And I don't think the visuals are all that impressive, but I'll give you some commentary because the verbals are more telling.
Oh, God. Oh, that's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. Holy cow.
Oh, yeah. Look at this.
Look at this.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
It doesn't look like that big of a deal. It really doesn't. I look at that video, I'm like, it doesn't look like that big a deal, man. It's like we see laser shows and light shows and virtual reality. I mean, the actuality of it, it's not that big. By the way, I'm running ahead of time. This is 10 o'clock special. I haven't shared with anyone else. By the way, one of the signs of Jesus in Isaiah, one of the signs is he doesn't have great physical appearance. The coming Messiah is not going to have great physical appearance. And the eclipse actually didn't have great physical appearance. It really didn't. But there was something beyond that. I don't know if it's because it went darker than it should. I don't know if it's because the birds just shut up like immediately. I don't know if it's because you could hear crickets. Crickets came out. 1:30 in the afternoon. Whatever. Let's start chirping. I don't know what it was. But anyone who was there will tell you something different took place. Something happened there. And you only got it if you were at 100%. That was it, 100%. Only that, 100%. This is the way it is with Jesus. You don't get life at 93%. You don't. You maybe get a Christian funeral for 93%. You might get a fire pass for 93%. I don't know, but you only get the life for 100%, and he's the only one who says he comes to give life. I'm pro-science. I love science. Science predicted this eclipse. I love science. I love the study because science tells us that God is an engineer and he's an artist at the same time. I'm total pro-science. And as I see some people go down the science rabbit hole, I'm not seeing life. I listened to a podcast recently with Professor Brian Green from Columbia University, and he said this. He said, we are in a fundamentally senseless position. This is a fundamentally senseless position we find ourselves in. Why? Because science can't describe love. Science can't define love. Science can't tell us why we're here. Science can't tell you have any purpose. You have no purpose. You're just a random string theory or whatever. I don't even understand string theory, even know if I put that in proper context. I don't know. But Jesus gives life, but he only gives it when you're lined in. If you're 99% with Jesus, you are 100% off. There's no big deal about you. I'm telling you, there's no big deal. In fact, it's the 99%ers that give the rest of us a bad name. It's the 93%ers that get the rest, because everyone says, if that's a fall of Jesus, that's one of many ways. Well, of course it is, because your life isn't any freaking different, of course. Because you're really not in alignment. You're not in alignment with the Son. You're not one with the Son. Believe me, I have days where I'm out of alignment. Years I'm out of alignment. Moments I'm out of alignment. The most spiritually treacherous time for me this last summer was right before I went away on my summer break. I got together with a financial advisor. For the most part, whenever I get with financial advisors over the last several decades of my life, it's a depressing experience. They're like, "Oh man, you gotta start like saving more because you're really not gonna be prepared. Well, over the last several years, I've started to up my game, and the views have gotten a little more positive. Till finally, this guy who kind of manages my retirement account says, "Hey, here's the numbers. Here's where we're trending. And you're looking pretty good. You're looking good. Just keep doing what you're doing. You're looking good. Looking good." I can't tell you how happy I was when I left. I'm happy, happy. And in fact, I'm thinking about what am I going to do when I'm 65 and spend money when I'm away from all the draining people at Crossroads. And what am I going to do when I'm here? How good is it going to be? And I find it's good when you're doing stuff financially well. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with feeling good when you're doing something right. But I tell you what, I just noticed I was getting life from this. My financial perspective should not be the thing that's giving me life. Because guess what? When it comes off, when it goes down, market goes down, guess what you don't have? You don't have life. I just recognized that I was getting life from something that only Jesus should be able to give me life for. Friends, I'm telling you right now, your best shot at life is being fully eclipsed by Jesus. History is very, very clear. That is what gives life. Life abundant, life that lasts, life that matters. And there's a sign that he wants you in relationship with. It's a sign of communion. Go ahead and take out your communion cups you got in today, or if you're Crossroads anywhere, get your elements out that you got that we prepped you for. Let's talk about communion. This is a sign that Jesus said, when you gather together, do this in remembrance of me. It's a sign of who Jesus is. We do it here at Crossroads once a series. And he took out bread, much more substantive than this wafer. He took out bread and he says, "This bread is a sign of my body. It represents my body. This bread is going to be broken for you. I'm going to be beaten. I'm going to be nailed to a tree. And I want you to see this as a sign that I love you and I will give myself for you. For all those who have been eclipsed by Jesus, for all those who he is your life, and for only those who he is your life, the body of Christ, broken for you as a sign of his love for you. Take and eat. Then you can take out the other foil part where we have the juice underneath, which originally was wine. And Jesus says, this wine is a sign of my blood. It signifies my blood. My blood is going to be poured out for you. They didn't understand what it meant at that point because they didn't understand the sign. But you and I understand now because he had puncture wounds in his wrists, through his feet, crown of thorns in his head brought blood down his face, a back that was flogged and whipped and shredded. He was a bloody mess. His blood was shed. He was the sacrifice, the beyond 7-day sacrifice, so that you and I wouldn't have to sacrifice ourselves eternally, because our God, he's a just God. And the cross is a sign of his justice. And the blood of Christ is a sign of his love for you and how much he values you. The blood of Jesus for all who were eclipsed. Take and drink. Why don't we stand and close out our time with telling him that he is the life.
And I believe you are the way, the truth, the life. And I believe you are the way, the truth, the life. Circumstance, I believe you are my fortress, you are my portion, you are the hiding place. I believe you are the way, the truth, the light. I believe you are the way.
God is a fan of yours. He is for you and his son Jesus, sign of how valuable you are to him. Go with life today. Go with life, and we'll see you next weekend.
It was great to be together this week. Make sure you're right back here next week to kick off our new series, Thrive.
You were not made for a boring life. Scraping by, barely surviving, grinding out the grind, weighed down and worn out. No way. Not you. That's no way to live. You were made to thrive. Handpicked for glory by a creator who designed you for life. Life lived to the full. Go through hell in pursuit of heaven. Rise above the sea of mediocrity and make a mark. Learn how to thrive.